right when our eyes beheld an eerie sight. The president appeared with pokes very strange, the zombies and vampires of global climate change. It's not global warming, say oil company disciples. Our math tells us it's natural weather cycles. These claims from industry heavies, let the president rest behind his own protective levees. They're doing the climate mash. Real science is bad. Solutions are trash. And they do it for the cash. The creatures were having fun. Our Congress was overrun. We couldn't tell the mindless zombies from the elected ones. Now we can stop this. We have the technology. But first we have to get past the industry ideology. We need your help. I'm glad to show you how. Tell your leaders in Washington to save our climate now.
And that is Bobby Boris Pickett, and that song came out during W's reign when it was raining acid rain and avoidance of dealing with climate change, and all kinds of legislation and work at the EPA got quashed in the interest of protecting the special interests and the status quo. Of course, I think the special interests is all of our interests, and that is survival on this beautiful planet and continuing to have abundance and diversity that we grew up with and making sure we have that for our children. But along comes some more scary news. Sorry, but this is the theme of the show today, Halloween. Well, folks, it looks like another Earth, a second one, will soon be needed. That is according to the World Wildlife Fund and also the Global Footprint folks. We're going to say hello to Nicole Freeling. She's going to give us more of the bad news. But again, why do we bother depressing you? Well, we know that you're going to be concerned enough about it to do something, and that is the whole point after all. So welcome to the Green Front, Nicole.
Thank you, Betsy. It's great to be here.
So is this a surprise? I mean, you know, I've been using one of the startling facts for years when I'm trying to get someone's attention on why we really are unsustainable. When I say, you know, we use 5% of the world's population in the United States, and we have 5% of the population, we use 20% of the resources and create 20% of the waste. So we are inherently unsustainable. But you've actually documented, quantified, just how much we are consuming and populating and what that means. The Earth can no longer sustain us at this rate.
Yeah. Basically, we are a nonprofit research group, and we are trying to serve as sort of the planetary accountants. We measure human demand on the biosphere, and we compare that with nature's regenerative supply. And what our most recent findings have found is that if we wanted to live within nature's means, if we wanted to consume resources within what the planet could continue to supply, we would currently need actually 1.5 planets. And by 2030, if we continue on our current course, we will need 2.
And since there's no half planets out there, let's just round it up to 2, right? Like you
said,
up to 2030, we'll need 2 by then. So that's great work from the Global Footprint Network. Advancing the science of sustainability is your tagline. I know you have great work out there with Matthijs Wackernagel and talking to people about how they can actually measure their own ecological footprint by adding up, calculating their energy use and resource use. And many people are surprised when they see that they have a heavier impact than they might have suspected, by being an American, unless you're super conscientious and careful and proactive in trying to reduce your footprint, it's easy to get up there pretty quickly.
Yeah, and first let me direct folks to where they can calculate their own ecological footprint and explore scenarios to reduce it, which is at footprintnetwork.org/calculator. Americans do have quite a large ecological footprint. On average, we are among the highest. If everyone on Earth lived like we did, we would need 4.5 planets to sustainably meet our needs. Some of that is due to individual lifestyle choices that we can easily change. And you can make a huge difference, that way. Many people are also surprised when they take our quiz that it's, you know, they do everything that they can to minimize their impact and their resource consumption, and they still need the resources of two planets. And part of that is because as an American, you have your per capita share of this society's footprint, which is all of our infrastructure, all of our highways, our airports, our schools, our hospitals, and our military. And people find this discouraging sometimes, but in fact, it's really an important part of the picture and the message, because individual choices are really important. But to make the large-scale shifts that we're going to need to make to address this issue, we've also really got to look at the way our societies and economies are structured and make shifts in the way that our entire infrastructure, economy, and value systems are set up.
So in short, we need to green America across the spectrum, and that's why I love talking to young people these days who are otherwise appropriately afraid to graduate in a pretty bleak job market and economy. But, you know, as I like to say, the future is green or not at all. So look where we are now ecologically, where we need to be. Just look at the, you know, CO2 out there in the atmosphere now. We're needing to get to 350 parts per million, and we're up to 390, I believe. And we've got to go backwards, and we're still piling up dirt on the mountain. So if young people can see the opportunities and taking whatever it is they're interested in and putting a green sort of reframe or tint on it, I would think that that would bring some job security. And that's the good news, I guess, amidst the bad news.
Yeah, and we do think that there is some good news, and it's actually in that self-interest issue that I heard you were speaking of earlier. We are working with governments, and we're trying to really get the message to national leaders that it is in their self-interest to address their ecological balance sheet. We would expect any reasonable leader to keep track of their financial assets and their expenditures and be concerned about deficits. And we should expect no less with the ecological assets that are ultimately the foundation of our livelihoods and lives. We also think the trends that we see have a clear message along that front. The pressure on resources is escalating, and it's escalating at an extremely rapid rate. We clearly don't have two planets. The recent financial crisis in the world has shown what happens with deficit spending. You can continue it for a while, but it creates a bubble, and those bubbles burst, and it's very painful. And we believe the same is likely to happen with resource access. Those countries that depend on an extremely large level of resource demand to support their economies are really putting themselves at risk. And the countries that are going to be best positioned to face the future are those that are able to provide the best quality of life on the smallest level of ecological demand. We think once that message starts to sink in, that it really is in every country's interest it's important what your neighbor's doing, your global neighbors are doing, but you really also need to, you know, repair the hole in your own boat. So then we think, you know, we will start to see shifts.
And I just see this list. I'll read it quickly. The top 10 contributors to the global ecological footprint are, of course, us, the United States, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Denmark, Belgium, Estonia, Canada, Australia, and Kuwait, and Ireland. Estonia, how did they get in there?
Well, there are probably factors that we can point to, such as use of coal. It may be that their housing stock is inefficient, and certain other issues. We look globally at the way humans are using resources, and so when we want to drill down on this micro level, what we do is we try to work in country to get a better picture of what the data are telling us. So we're currently reaching out to governments in all of these top 10 countries to try to say, okay, well, we've got these numbers, but how do we really dig into them and understand what are the forces on the ground that are driving this?
Yeah, in the oil-rich areas like Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, I could see why they have a bigger footprint, because where there's wealth, there often is, you know, more development, more production, more manufacturing, that kind of thing. So it, I guess it's kind of surprising when you see a little country like Belgium and Denmark in Scandinavia. I would have thought that they were pretty green. So it's not so logical or easy to predict, I guess, who is contributing. And I guess it's not just CO2, but just use of resources overall.
Right. Yeah, that's true. For example, in Belgium and Denmark, you know, CO2 is a big contributor. Another fairly sizable, although not as much as carbon, but a sizable part of their footprint is their food footprint. And you know, in these countries, they tend to have more kind of refined consumption of foods and a lot of meat consumption and very sort of kind of more sophisticated food consumption, which, while that's quite healthful and it also, you know, certainly has some ecological benefits, it may actually require a greater land area than the sort of really cheap bulk food that the U.S. is more accustomed to consuming, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so some of the solutions we've been talking about in the last segment, so individuals, what individuals can do to make a difference, and that's where we start, but of course that's not where we end. We need to have an educated populace demanding greener politicians and products and programs and policies. What would you add to that equation?
Yeah, well, you know, one sort of piece of low-hanging fruit, if you will, infrastructure is something that locks us into patterns for decades to come. It is with us for quite a long time. Choices that we make in housing, energy, transportation, today really determine our resource patterns for decades to come. And we all need to ask and push our leaders to ask, are we investing in things that are going to be opportunities or traps as pressure on resources continues to escalate?
Thanks so much for the bad news and scary news as we approach the Halloween season. This kind of thing, of course, can be quite overwhelming. How do we keep people from going into paralysis and fear? And boy, isn't it unfortunate that it seems that it's such a narrow window between ignorance and overwhelm?
Yeah, I mean, we really try to keep our message, you know, upbeat, and really we can change the curve. We have recently, as you mentioned, come out with the Living Planet report with WWF, and in this report we present various scenarios with different choices in energy and food consumption and land use planning and the way that we value natural capital and all of those things that really could change the curve and get us back to where we are living within the budget of what the planet can sustain. So I think it's really a value shift, and I think we are beginning to see that value shift. It takes a little while for the political will to catch up.
It seems so. Yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about in our next segment with Dave Roberts of Grist.org. What is going on or not going on in Washington? It's pathetic, and it's enough to make a girl want to start a green tea party. That's what we're going to talk about. See if Dave will help me. Maybe you can join into the Global Footprint Network, because it's time to say, hey, wait a minute. You know, look at the science, folks. We cannot afford to put these issues and the environment and climate, you know, encompass so many critically important issues on the back burner. We had a dinner guest last night who has some different political views, I think it's safe to say. And he said, Betsy, we can't deal with these environmental issues till we get our economy strong. Nothing is going to matter till we do that. And everything he said about the economy, I said, I feel the same way about the environment, just reverse it. So where he was saying it's the economy, stupid, not to diminish the importance of having a healthy dollar and a healthy economy, but if we, the green jobs and the transition from the old dinosaur age of fossil fuels and those non-renewable sources to a transition to a cleaner, greener future, that therein lies a lot of opportunities, and that can help pull us out of this recession, out of this slump. And those who think we got to fix the economy first and then get to the environment, I think are really not quite seeing reality as it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, where is the economy without the resources that drive it?
How do you
create something when the trees and the fish and the, you know, and the crops are gone?
And to paraphrase the late, great David Brower, there's, he said something like there's no jobs on a dying planet, and I've used that in many different instances and replaced whatever it is people are talking about that they're so passionate about. I say, well, there's not this on, there's no economy on a dead planet, and that may sound kind of drastic. We're not going to die overnight, but the planet will be around. It's just those of us who like living here are going to have to really wake up and deal with reality sooner rather than later, and we certainly need more leadership in Washington and around the globe, and hopefully that is going to be coming in real time and not just something we're going to dump on, you know, our children's generation. So any parting words, optimistic outlooks, even though this news is pretty grim, that human demand is outstripping nature's regenerative capacity at such an alarming rate?
I think the parting news is that really there are physical limits to how much we can demand from nature, and climate change, biodiversity loss, these are all signs that the bill for our overspending is coming due. Really living within our ecological means is not a romantic ideal that comes at the expense of a high quality of life. In fact, it's the only way in the long run that a high quality of life can be secured.
Nor should it be a political position. It's quite practical, and that's the foremost thing to keep in mind here. When I was having this argument with a dinner guest, you know, I said, do you need food, air, and water? And he said, well, yeah, but it's not going to disappear. I said, don't be so sure. Not quickly, not overnight, but we are seeing, you know, global shortage of clean, potable water in many places. If we have increased droughts, we're going to impact our food supply. If we do have disappearing bees are responsible for a quarter of our agriculture. We just have to keep making those connections for people to not take what we get from nature, which is our life support system, for granted.
That's exactly right. They found another planet that looks like it has favorable conditions to support life, but I think it's too many billions of light years away, at least for my kids to comfortably make the trip. So
we think it's going to cost a lot of our own. And if we think it's going to cost a lot of money to address climate change here on this planet, imagine exploration and development of another planet. I think it's a little bit easier just to work with the one we have here. Thanks so much, Nicole Freeling, Communications Manager with the Global Footprint Network. Appreciate your taking time to talk with us and for sharing this important information. If you'd like to find out more, this is the 2010 Living Planet Report. When we come back from this short break, we're going to check in with Dave Roberts. He is one of my favorite writers. He writes at grist.org, and some really interesting articles coming out recently from the New Yorker in particular. And Dave, like me, has become obsessed with what they say, because a really revealing look into what went on in terms of climate change politicking in the back rooms. And it's pretty dirty stuff, pretty scary stuff. We'll be right back.
These claims from industry heavies, let the president rest behind his own protective levies. They're doing the climate mash. Real science is bad. Solutions are trash. And they do it for the cash.